in a remarkable book entitled The Tears of Lady Meng, the Chinese author C.S. Song tells the story of a Chinese woman whose wedding day was shockingly and completely unexpectedly transformed from celebration into sorrow. On her wedding day, her husband is violently taken away by the political powers of the day to serve as a human sacrifice buried in a portion of the foundation of the Great Wall of China in order to ensure its successful completion. Now, Song, the writer, movingly describes the bereaved woman's journey to the wall where her husband's bones are buried. There she starts to cry inconsolably. Her tears reverberate throughout the land, and then an incredible thing happens. Wonder above all wonders, the Great Wall of China comes tumbling down. To the amazement of everyone, her tears shatter the seemingly immovable setting of structure and stone, of brick and bulwark, yes, of brutal politics and manipulative power plays. Song describes and summarizes this event in a few sentences. He says, "She must have wept her heart out. Her wailing must have moved the firmament of heaven, shaking the foundation of the earth. Her crying must have stirred all living souls to rally behind her. And an incredible thing happened. The wall, that invincible wall, the wall that embodied brutal power and naked authority, collapsed and yielded up her husband's bones." In effect, the weeping of this Chinese woman tears down the walls of death itself. Her tears tear down the tomb of totalitarian terror. Her cries inaugurated change, creates resurrection, brings her husband back to life. He steps out of the tomb into the light of a new, surprising life. Now, one would say it's a weird story of a silly story, thinking that the Great Wall of China would fall down. But yes, in the text we have heard this morning, in Genesis chapter 21, we hear of another woman who cried, Hagar. Talk about vulnerability. She is a woman in a patriarchal world. More than that, she is a slave, taken from Egypt, a foreigner in all the sense of the word, and as her name, Hagar, suggests, a victim of power play, of messy and complex relationships, manipulated between the seamless, spineless attitude of Abram on the one hand, and the destructive jealousness of Sarah, used as a womb to carry Abram's child without her consent being asked or taken into consideration. Interesting enough, her name, Hagar, as you might have heard, was not even mentioned or named once in the preceding dialogue between Abram and Sarah about her fate. She was only called this slave woman, neglected, chased away twice, ending up with a dying child in the desert, in desolation. She represents the ultimate collateral damage of other people's agendas. At first glance, even the collateral damage of God's agenda to establish a covenant with Abram, the spineless father of believers. An unfortunate footnote or afterthought to the effort of this God to act in a faithful manner. In the desert, Hagar does what seems to be the only remaining thing to do. She lifts up her voice and she starts crying. But listen closely and look deeply, even deeper. There are more to these tears than meet the eyes. Hagar cries. She cries alone. Her only company is her dying son, laying a few meters away under a bush. She is in silence, surrounded by the desert. The sand underneath her hears her sobs. The wind carries away her weeping, alone and crying. And yet she is not alone. She is, as far as I could tell, the first human being recorded in the Bible doing what is ultimately human, and that is crying. She might be the first, but she's definitely not the last, and will not be the last for years to come. Her tears reverberate throughout history, gathering momentum, forming part of a tsunami of tears that floods the earth. Those of Israel crying out by mouth of the psalmist, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Psalm 22. Or, "How long, Lord, must we wait?" Psalm 30. Or Psalm 42. "My tears have been my food day and night." She groans with creation. She sobs for salvation. She weeps with those who live in expectation of the revelation of the glory of God, as Paul tells us in Romans chapter 8. Even if she knows nothing of this at this point in her life, sitting here on the sand of the desert, weeping into the wind, without her knowing, Hagar's tears mingle with those of mothers of all ages, weeping like Rachel. And not to be comforted with the tears of the mothers of the abducted daughters in Nigeria, of the abducted sons in Israel and Palestine, of the bereaved ones after the missile strikes have left their carnage. Hagar's tears are added drop after drop to those of the mothers of the fallen sons in all the senseless wars of centuries, to the tears of the fathers whose daughters have become bomb victims, offered up in a never-ending religious struggle on so many continents, to the tears of parents of the hungry of Sudan because they do not even have a grain of rice for themselves, to the tears of families of the teenagers dying in the crossfire of gang wars, to the tears of parents whose child was stabbed to death on our streets a few weeks ago, to the tears of disempowerment and displacement, of the vulnerable and the marginalized, drop by drop, giving volume to the force of the tsunami of tears that floods this earth. Hagar cries, but she does not cry alone in this world. She cries in the desert, but she cries Coram Deo, before and with God. I said earlier that we see in the Bible, this is the first recording of a human being crying, but she's not the first one to cry. The first recording of crying in the Bible is not that of Hagar and her tears in the desert, of the weeping of any other human being. For that matter, it is wonder above all wonders of the tears of God, crying out because of the sin of humanity. In a remarkable revelation of the innermost being of God, we hear, "The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain." Genesis 6, verse 6. So even before Hagar cries, God cries. Hagar, the nameless, neglected slave woman from Egypt, gives volume not only to the weeping of the world, but also to the groans of God himself, to those of the Spirit without words. She's taken by the hand, and she takes the hand of the one who stands in front of the grave of his dead friend Lazarus, and out of whom we hear in the shortest text in the Bible, John 11, 35, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. Hagar wept. God, God weeps for a better future. Just imagine this. Hagar and God weeping for resurrection, for life. Refusing to accept the unacceptable, to give in to hopelessness, to give up on the promise of the alternative, weeping for a better world, as you and I also do sometimes, where weeping will no longer be a way of life. Hagar cries, yes, but she does not cry alone, and she does not cry in vain. Her tears do not evaporate into the warmth of the desert. On the contrary, her tears move realities, express more than 1,000 tongues. Her sobs say more than a series of serious sermons. Her weeping weighs more than a myriad of words. She sees her son lying under the bush, and she sighs. And a sigh becomes a sign of protesting hope and a hopeful protest. Why? Because Hagar believes that God does in fact hear, as already suggested in the name of her son Ishmael when we read that in Genesis chapter 16. It is because she believes that Hagar calls upon God to hear, to grant grace and new beginnings. And it is out of faith in the hearing God that she weeps again and against all odds, protest against so-called reality of the day, against so-called destiny. Her tears, in fact, brings heaven into motion, for we hear God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid. For God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." God hears Hagar. Truly, when we think of it, the power of tears must not be underestimated. The Great Wall of China cannot choke or chain it, and the desolation of the desert cannot dampen or deter it. Someone like Jean-Paul Sartre even suggested that tears represent the magical transformation of this world. Why? Because it changes the relation of those who shed tears to the world. But also consciously or unconsciously, it changes the attitudes of those to whom the tears are addressed. This is what happens in our text. Hagar refused. And she refuses to accept her circumstances. She calls upon God as the only who can effectively help her. And God hears her and does precisely that. In a few short sentences, the biblical text gives an account of this magical transformation. Hagar's eyes are opened and the boy is taken from under the bush. Lazarus rises from the grave. Water springs forth from a well. To be sure, this magical transformation brought about by tears does not equate for a quick fix in life. God is not, and that we must remember, not a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat whenever we cry. But we read that Hagar still dwells in the desert, a place of death and a place of desolation with her son. But we now also hear that Ishmael, her son, becomes skillful in the use of the bow and the arrow, an unmistakable symbol for the food and future survival of them all. Now this Egyptian slave woman is no longer neglected, but nurtured, no longer nameless, but named. What Abram and his wife Sarah did not, God does. Calling Hagar by her name. More than that, Hagar is the first one in the Bible to call to God, and she calls him the one who sees me, El Roy, that you'll always also find in Genesis chapter 60. She becomes the mother of a nation in the end, does what no other mother is ever recorded as doing in the Old Testament. choosing a wife for her son. So there, a future was born for this woman, where Israel would soon end up as slaves of her son. Of course, many tears are still flowing today on this earth, on all the continents represented, all over. The tsunami has not abated. On the contrary, many walls are still dividing us, moving us to tears, whether in China, in India, in South Africa, in Europe, here in Scotland, in the Americas, between the East and the West, between the North and the South, between the rich and between poor, between the powerful and the powerless, between ideology and ideology, between religion and religion. But somehow, Hagar gives us hope. She teaches us that tears have the power to move the fermentation of heaven, to shake the foundations of the earth, to stir all living souls, to create future, to bring the walls down, tumbling down. And yes, God is the first one to cry in the Bible. Therefore, he also sends his son Jesus, who knows about all our tears and therefore stands in for us. He gave up his life to be saved, to save us from everlasting tears. Therefore, he reminds us, come to me. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And now I would also like to do the same passage from the Message again, and I don't often read from the Message in a service, but this is also a very beautiful and lovely translation. Jesus says, are you tired? Are you worn out? Burn out on religion. Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you learn to live freely and lightly. Therefore, my dear friends in Christ, the Lord promises us in the words of Revelation, chapter 21, verse 4, that he is also the last one to wipe away all the tears from our eyes. Amen.